Okay, we're going to begin here on the Tav Lamed Chet Amud Aleph. Just before we do, just to remind ourselves where we are in the middle of the sugya, we brought a Mishnah from Ahalot with regards to the Shidra and the Gulgolot. Over there, this is a Mishnah that we've seen in many places. There's a machloka between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. With regards to the Shidra, how much it has to be missing, either to be a treifa, or if it's found in Ohamet, that it will no longer consider be Tameh. So there they have a machloket, whether it's one vertebrae or two vertebrae, but really not our issue. The other machloket has to do with the skull itself. With regards to the skull, we saw that Beit Shammai says that what has to be missing from the skull is gemlo makdeach, whereas Beit Hillel says it is whatever would take away the life of the chai. A person couldn't live without. The Mishnah doesn't define what that is. We have from the Amoraim a statement that means it's the size of a sella, the size of a coin.
And then what?
It's either a person is a treifa, or if the skull is found inside of an ohel mate, it will not be metame ba'ohel. So it's the two sides of the same coin, it's just that it's no longer a skull. See, if you're alive, that means that you're no longer alive, you're a treifa. If you're a skull by itself, then you're longer metame, because you're not a skull. So that's the two sides of the same coin. So then we said about that, Beit Hillel says it's the size of a coin, and Beit Shammai says it's the size of a gemlo makdeach, the size of a bore or a drill. Gemara brought another Mishnah after that from Kelim, and the Mishnah in Kelim talks about skylights, and over there it says the size of a skylight to allow Tumah to pass from one location to the other. When it's Bidei Shemaim, gives one measurement. Then it comes and gives a measurement to Bidei Adam. And Bidei Adam, it says that the measurement is the size of a drill. Size of a makdeach hagadol belishka. Big drill that was inside the Azara. That's how big that opening has to be. The Mishnah in Kelim gives a number of parallel items that are that same size. And that's what you have at the bottom of Lamed Zayin Amud Bet. It says it's the kamo makdeach gadol shelishka. The same size as a pundion italki. The Italian pundion coin, and casella nironit, the size of the Nero cella, and then also kumlo nekev ol, or the size of the hole in the yoke. Those are all the same size, just giving you multiple ways to see the same size. The problem is obvious, which is that if we say that the makdeach is equivalent to the size of a cella, then it turns out Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai have the same opinion now. Because we said, Beit Hillel says the amount that you would take out from the skull, and you tell me the chai b'yamot, and we said that that was the size of a cella. We said Beit Shammai says it's the amount of a kamlo makdeach, the size of a drill. And you just said the size of a drill is the same as the size of a cella nironit. So that's the size of a cella as well. So now if they're saying the same thing, there's no machloket between them anymore in the Mishnah in Olot. And that's he says ishtik. He had no response to them. Then Varmalei Rav Chisda tried to answer the question, and this harks back to the original question that brought us here, which is, what is Kamalo Karshina? Our Mishnah mentioned that the size of Kamalo Karshina is the size of the mum that you need. When it came to the nekev in the ear of the Bechor, it had to be Kamalo Karshina. And the Gemara's question, we had a question over there about whether the Karshina means it just fits in, or can it pass through the hole? Does it mean that this Karshina is able to fit through easily and can slide back and forth in and out of this hole? Or does it mean it just plugs the hole? Which of the two is it? So the response, that was the question that was posed by Rav Hoshaya. And Rav Muna answered him, I don't know the answer to your question, but I do know the answer from these Mishnayot, this case. And here comes that answer. V'amrlei Rav Chisda, now some people take out the word Rav Chisda over here. That maybe the answer to this stira about why there is a difference between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai is has to do with the size of the drill hole that you made. You can make a drill hole that's the size of the drill itself. I mean, the drill fit in, and as you twist it in, it'll be stuck in there. Or you can have a drill hole where you widen the hole where the drill could pass easily in and out of that hole. So that would be the difference between them. And that would explain there's a small difference between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, but there is a difference between them. But you see that your question about this Karshina, whether it can just get lodged in there or whether it can pass through, is a machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai with regards to the cella as well. Does the cella mean it just fits in and gets lodged in there, the cella? Or does the cella mean it can pass through in and out? And that would be the machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai saying it's just the smaller hole where the drill just fits in. Is Beit Hillel saying it's the wider hole of the drill. V'amarle Rab Tachlifa. Now again, this girsa here, the Shita Mekubetza takes out the next couple of words, this like next line or so. It says, "Remember to chalifa lo tema shema." Don't say maybe that's the explanation. I love vadai magdeach b'chisumo. That is the explanation of the difference between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Sarech le'atlot alea. And you can hang your hat on it. Yeah, that's it. That's the explanation of the difference between the Mishneyot, Kechizkia Aviyakesh. The same way that Chizkia Aviyakesh was believed in his Eidut, so too, that will be the explanation of these Mishnayot that we just had in Ohlot and in Kilim. And who's this? Chizkia Aviyakesh? The Tanan. Zu Eidut Eid Chizkia Aviyakesh, Lifnei Rabbi Gamliel B'Yavno. He gave over this testimony before Rabbi Gamliel and the Chachamim and Yavnesh. Amar Mishum Rabbi Gamliel Azakein. He says it over from the older Rabbi Gamliel. Remember that in the Shoshelet and Asi in Eretz Yisrael, that they alternatively were named Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Gamliel, and then you have Rabbi Gamliel Azakein, the older Rabbi Gamliel. So he said it over the name of the older Rabbi Gamliel. Kol, Shein lo toch v'klicheres, Ein lo achorayim l'chaluka. A klicheres is only mitamei mitocho. It's only, first of all, mitamei, if it has a toch. It has to have a beit kibul, a place, a receptacle, an area where it can receive, number one. Number two is, when it does have an area that receives, it's only mekabel tumah from the inside, not from the outside. So that means, if the tumah touches the inside of the klicheres, it's tamei. The inside and the outside will be tamei. If a sheretz touches the outside of a klicheres, nothing doing. Nothing happens. That's the din of klicheres. That's what he says here. Kol shein lo toch b'klicheres. Klicheres doesn't have a toch. This means now it is what's called pshutei klicheres. It's a flat klicheres. Ein lo acharayim l'chaluka. Then there's no back that's separate from the front. Which means that the back and the front, the toch and the acharayim, will have the same din. So here you have a flat klicheres. We say if it became tamei on one side, the other side's tamei. No matter which side. Now, what's toch and acharayim? It's a flat piece of klicheres. What's the toch and acharayim? So both Rashi and Tosafot explain over here, the toch means the side shimishtam shimbo. The side that you use is called the toch. The achorayim is the side that you don't use. So over here, that distinction that we draw between the Beit Kibul, which is Mekabel Tumah and a Klicheres, and the achorayim, which is not Mekabel Tumah, that's only when it has a Beit Kibul. But if it doesn't have a Beit Kibul and it's a flat piece, then it's Mekabel Tumah from both sides. And therefore, nitma tocho, nitma gabo. If the side that is utilized becomes tamei, the other side will also become tamei. Nitma gabo, if the unused side becomes tamei, nitma tocho. Gemara says, klicheres, bitocho talachro chmana. Wait a minute, how could you explain this case this way? We know that the din of a klicheres is that it's not called a klicheres unless it has a toch, unless it has a beit kibul. Itle toch, itmile. If it has a beit kibul, it has a receptacle in it, then it's mitameh. Leit lei toch, lo yitmileh. If it doesn't have an inside, if it doesn't have a beit kibul, it's not mekabel tumah. Pshutei kli cheres, a flat piece of cheres, is mekabel tumah from both sides, it's not mekabel tumah whatsoever. Kli cheres to be mekabel tumah needs a beit kibul. And over here, we're talking about something that does not have a beit kibul, and therefore it's not mekabel tumah at all. So what are you telling me that it becomes tameh if you touch the one side, the other side becomes tameh? It's not mekabel tumah at all. This is how to explain this testimony, this edut of Chizkia Aviyakesh. Kol she'ein lo toch b'klicheres. Anything that does not have a beit kibul or receptacle in a klicheres, kignegdo b'kli shetef. When you're dealing with a kli shetef, Rashi points out, is shkliets. It's a wooden keli. Tosfot also says it's a wooden keli. Rashi says there's some that say kli shetef is metallic kli, and he says they're wrong. Because later on the Gemara is going to say in one second, that ask a question on this and say, how could it become tamei? And it's clear that metallic kelim become tamei no matter what. So I'll show you that when we get there. But Rashi says we must be talking about a wooden kli over here, this kli shetef. And that's because a kli eitz yishatef b'mayim. It has to be washed in the water. Therefore the term kli shetef is the equivalent or synonymous with a kli eitz, with a wooden keli. Now, the Mishnah is going to read this way. Anything that does not have an inside in a kli cheres, kenegdo b'chisetef. Then in a wooden keli, ein lo acharayim l'chaluka. Then there is no distinction between the inside and the outside. Nitma tocho, nitma gabo. The inside, meaning the utilized side of this piece of wood, becomes tamei, then the non-utilized side will also become tamei. Nitma gabo. The non-utilized side of the wood becomes tamei. Nitma tocho. The inside also will become tamei. So the Gemara says, lamalei the mitlei b'kli cheres. Why do you have to say something about kli cheres and then apply it to a wooden keli? Neima, why don't we just say, Koshein lo tof kli shetef. It doesn't have a beit kibul, it doesn't have a receptacle in a wooden keli. Ein lo achoraim lechaluka. That there is no inside and outside distinction. I mean, there's no distinction between the receptacle and the outside of the receptacle. Where it says, Hakamashman diyesh lo tof. If it does have a receptacle, harihu kli cheres, then it has the same din as a kli cheres. A wooden keli will have the same din as a kli cheres. Ma kli cheres nitma tocho nitma gabo. Just like by a kli cheres, which I explained before, that if a kli cheres has a receptacle, some earthenware vessel has a receptacle, if the receptacle comes to me, the entire keli becomes to me, also the outside. Lo nitma tocho. If the inside does not become tamei, meaning the back became tamei, lo nitma gabo, then the back doesn't become tamei. Af kli shetef, nitma gabo, if its back became tamei, lo nitma tocho, then the internal side does not become tamei. Af kli shetef, so to a wooden keli, nitma tocho, if the receptacle, if it has a receptacle, then if the receptacle comes tamei, nitma gabo, then the external part also becomes tamei. Lo nitma tocho, meaning that nitma gabo, then lo nitma tocho, then the internal side will not become tamei. Now the Gemara asks, the bottom line is now that the Mishnah is suggesting that a kli cheres and a kli eitz have the same din. A kli cheres, we clearly know the din, that's a din min haTorah, but that it requires a beit kibul to be mekabel tuma. Flat klis of kli cheres is not mekabel tuma whatsoever, it's a pshute kli cheres, because the Torah demands toch, it demands a beit kibul, a receptacle. Now we also know the din by min haTorah for kli cheres is that if the internal side becomes tamei, the external side also becomes tamei. If the external side becomes tamei, then the internal side does not become tamei. Or, basically, there is no Kabbalat Tumah from the outside. If the Sheretz touches the outside of the Kli Cheres, then nothing happens. So we know that all min haTorah. Problem is, where did we find this by a Kli Eitz? Here you're equating the two in the Mishnah. Kli Eitz, where does it come up with this requirement that it's only mitameh mitocho? Where is this requirement that it only is mitameh if it has a toch? Where'd you get all this information from? And suggesting also that a flat Kli Eitz would be mikabel Tumah. Now, in terms of a tochol that requires a receptacle become tamei, that we have from the pasuk, because we'll see this in a second, a kliyetz is compared to a sack. And just like a sack can be used or is utilized in the inside to carry things around, so too a kliyetz requires a receptacle to mekabel tuma. So as far as it requiring a toch, that we understand, because that we need to know from the pasuk. But the fact that when you have an internal receptacle, that if it becomes tamei, the outside becomes tamei, sure, that makes a lot of sense, because the whole kli became tamei. But the fact that if the outside becomes tamei, that the inside is not tamei, or that the back is not tamei, where did you get that from? That's a special din in kli cheres. How can you apply that to kli eitz? Number one question on this explanation. The number two question, which we'll get to in a little bit, is pshute kli eitz. Pshute kli eitz are flat kli eitz. Flat kli eitz is not mekabel tuma. Just like a flat kli cheres is not mekabel tumah, because of this requirement of toch, this requirement of a receptacle, because they're compared to a sack. So then, how can you suggest over here that a kli eitz is mekabel tumah both sides when it's flat? It's not mekabel tumah whatsoever. So those are the two questions that you have to ask here on this explanation. The Mishnah, that's what the Gemara is going to do. I'll just give you the background so you understand where the Gemara is coming from. Bishlama kli cheres gali bei rachmana tocho. Torah says that the tuma is nitkabel in the internal side. Ela kli shetef mi gali bei rachmana tocho. Where did the Torah ever say that yeah, only the internal receptacle is mekabel tuma? Where it says, ibe tuma doraita hachanami. If we were talking about tuma from a Torah level, you'd be right. Hacha b'mayaskina, and here we're talking about tumat mashkim dirabanan. Here we're talking about tumat mashkim, which is all a din dirabanan. Ditnan, we have a Mishnah, that we've seen this before. One of the main places that it's discussed is actually in the end of the first parak of Psachim. Kli shenitma achura b'mashkim. Kli that becomes tamei from its outside, its back, by mashkim. Achura b'tameim tocho agno ozno v'yadav teorim. Then only the external part of the kli is tamei. The remainder of the kli is not tamei. Tocho meaning the receptacle. Ogno, Rashi says, is the beit kibul atachton, which means the receptacle that it sits on. And that if it has a base that it sits on, that it has a receptacle to it, that will not become tamei. As well as Rashi that gives that, the other explanation of Ogno is svato, it's rim, it's brim. Ozno, he says, that's what they put on the chaviot shocheres, the beit achiza, the handles on the side. Ozno, that's what they put on the chaviot shocheres, on the pitchers, the handle of the pitcher. None of those become Tamei, because Humat Mashkim is a din derabbanon. Let's remind ourselves of this, that in general, Mashkim and Ochlim cannot be Mitamei Kelim. Foods and liquids are not Mitamei Kelim. There is one exception to that rule, and that's the liquids of Azav and Azava. The liquids of Azav and Azava, if they're expelled by Azav and Azava, they have a din of like an Avatuma, and they are Mitamei Kelim to be a Rishon Tuma'a. So what we're choshesh for here is the Chachamim, because of those liquids of the Zav, the Zava, they were gozer in all liquids, that they are Mitamei Kelim, just like the liquids of a Zav and a Zava would be. That's the Gzeirat Chachamim about liquids. The liquids are Mitamei, even though generally liquids have no effect on a Keli, because we're choshesh for the case of Zav and Zava, where their mashke, Zav and Zava, would be mitamei et midoraita. In order to show that it was only a din derabanan, how do you show it's a din derabanan? You'd say that the tumah doesn't work like a tumah doraita. Zav and Zava, their liquids touch a keli, the entire keli would be tamei. So the rabbanan made a gzerah, but they said this. When the liquids touch the outside of the keli, only the outside of the keli is tamei, the internal receptacle is not tamei. And that's to indicate to you that this is all a din derabanan. So that's what we're talking about in the Mishnah here. We're talking about a case here of a kli shetef that was tied, a kli eitz that was touched by liquids on the outside. So now, a kli shetef has the same din as a kli cheres. Just like a kli cheres, you touch the internal side, the whole thing is tameh. You touch the internal side remains tahor. So too now by a kli eitz. Not regular tumah by a kli eitz, but the tumat mashkim midirabanan. Liquids that touch a kli from the outside, midirabanan. If they touch the internal side of the kliates, the whole thing is tamei, even though it's the rabbanan. But if it touches the outside, only the outside is tamei, the internal side will not be tamei. That's to remind us that tumat mashkim is only a din derabanan, so you're not soreif truma, you're not soreif kodshim based on this, because it's not really tamei deoraita. It can't be soreif until it really becomes tamei. You have to wait for ibur tzura, you have to wait for other things to happen. But you can't eat it because it's tumah derabanan. But in terms of tumah doraita, this is not tumah doraita, and this is the siman that it's not tumah doraita. So that's how the Gemara deals with it. Now we can read this and say it's not unkosher. Nitma achorav b'mashkim achorav tmeim tocho agno ozno v'yadav teorim nitma tocho kulo tamei. So you see here, this tumah mashkim derabanan functions just like a kli cheres. So we're saying that's true by a kli eitz. Timi doraita ein ochel metamei kli v'ein mashkim metamei kli mina torah. Uchlim and mashkim cannot be mitamei kli. Rabbanan hu gozer mishum mashke zav zava. So it's explained that they were gozer because of the cases where you have liquids that are expelled by a zav zava. That means whether it's their saliva, whether it's their urine, any liquid that is expelled by them has a din of avatuma. Hilkach shavua rabbanan kituma dekli cheres. In order to show that it is a din derabanan, the rabbanan made it like a tumah of kli cheres. V'lo shavu a rabbanan ketumah doraita denafshei. They didn't make it like the regular tumah of a kli eitz. Regular tumah of kli eitz doesn't matter which side it touches the kli, outside or inside, the whole kli is tameh. So they shifted the normal rules of tumah by kli eitz to be like kli cheres in order to show abdu rabbanan hekera. The rabbanan made a heker here. Ki hekedol lisa falei tumah v'kodeshim. So tumah kodshim won't be burnt because on it, based on the fact that it's only tumah derabanan. So Gemara says ihachi. So let's move on. That was the first question that I explained to you. That how could it be that a kli eitz has the same din as a kli cheres? The answer to that is we're not talking about regular tumah. We're talking about tumat mashkim, and by tumat mashkim derabanan, a kli eitz looks like a kli cheres midoraita. Kli eitz midorabanan is a kli cheres midoraita. Number two, we said, is that if it's a flat piece. By kli cheres, we said a flat piece of kli cheres is not mekabel tumah because it requires a toch. Then we said, okay, so then we're going to say this Mishnah is talking about a kli eitz. That means that a kli eitz, if it has no toch, it has no beit kibul, if you touch one side, the other side becomes tameh. But the underlying assumption is that a flat piece of eitz would be mekabel tumah. Shute kli eitz mekabel tumah. Yach ein lo toch. Nami, la avid nami hekera. If that's the case, the rabbanon should make a takana here also. If this is talking about tumat mashkim, when the item is flat, you're saying it's going to mekabel tumah from both sides with tumat mashkim. Right? Why don't you make a heker? People are going to come to be so rafe this based on the fact that it's a deoraita. The Gemara says, no, we already make a heker when it has a big kibul, which is the normal situation of kliates. So therefore, we didn't need to make a heker in a case of pshute kliates. But pshute kliates, we know, min haTorah, are not mekabel tumah. And that's going to be the question right now. Ve'en lo toch b'kli shetev deoraita bark tu b'kubei tumahu? Wait a minute, a flat cleate, pshute cleates are not mekabel tumah in a Torah. Why are you being gozer mi derabonan on pshute cleates if it's not mekabel tumah midoraita? This is, by the way, how Rashi proves that we're talking about kli shetef is a cleates. Kli matechet, metallic kelim, do not have a requirement of toch, even flat metallic kelim are mekabel tumah. The fact that the Gemara asks here, how could it be that this flat item is mekabel tumah midoraita? Means it has to be talking about a wooden keli and not a metallic keli. Gemara says, Dumaya desak binan. We have a requirement by cleates that it be Dumaya desak. Masak mitaltel malev reikam. Just like a sack can be carried around full and empty. Avkol mitaltel malev reikam. So too, the only keli that is mikabel tuma is something that can be carried around full and empty. So this has two exclusions. Number one, it has to have a bait kibul. It has to have a receptacle to take things around in. And number two is it can't be so big that you can't carry it around. If it's a kli eitz hasui lenachat, it's a kli eitz that's made that it's not movable, it's always stationary, when it's full, then it's not mekabel tuma as well. But you see here, the pshute kli eitz, flat pieces of kli eitz are not mekabel tuma. So my answer is, v'hanach techazul demisot. Now we're talking about a pshute kli eitz that are re'uyim to sit on them. So that's to have a beit kibul, like a sack, and it has to be the ability to be carried around. That makes for two exclusions. One exclusion is if it's pshutei kliyetz, they're not tameh. And number two is if it's so big that when you fill it up, you can't carry it around. It's also not mekabel tumah. It's called kliyetz hayasui lenachat. So now the Gemara says, v'ana achad achazu demidrasot. So these are kliyetz that one could sit on. For instance, a kisei. You have a wooden chair. Safsal, a wooden bench. Those are mekabel tumah because they are made to sit on the mekabel tumah midras. So there are certain pshutei kliyetz that don't have a beit kibul that are mekabel tumah. That's what we're talking about over here. If it has a beit kibul, then it'll function like kli cheres. If it's a pshutei kliyetz that are mekabel tumah midoraita, meaning for midras, then they will also be mekabel tumat mashkim midrabanan. But that tumat mashkim midrabanan will not have that distinction of if it touches one side, the other side is not tameh. Both sides will become tameh if it touches one side. But they're only talking about those types of wooden kelim that otherwise would have tumat midoraita. They don't have tumat midoraita, there's no reason to be goes there, tumat mashkim, and those kliyetz. So that's this unique category of kliyetz, which is ra'ui lemidras. Now Tosafot over here points out, he says, I told you to go look in Baba Vatra and Erevin. We also had this Tosafot, actually in Menachot. Tosafot distinguishes and says that kliyetz actually has three different categories. The three different categories of kliyetz. There's a kliyetz, that's pshutei kliyetz, that's not mekabel tumah. That's a pshutei kliyetz, that is a small, flat piece of wood that's utilized by people, but doesn't really have a toch to it, doesn't have an inside to it, that's not mekabel tumah at all. There is a kliyetz that is mekabel tumah, tumat midras midoraita, and that's what we're talking about over here, something that is like a chair, something like a bench, which is flat piece of wood, but it's utilized as a midras, that is mekabel tumah midoraita. And then there's this middle category. He says that the wood is so big that it is utilized by man. For instance, the tabletop. He says that a tabletop will be mekabel tumah midrabanan. Not because it's meroya the midras. It's not a din like a kliyetz of a pshutei kliyetz that'll be tahor because it's too big and it's utilized by man. It has this in-between category. So Tosafot really lays out three different categories of kliyetz. Here he says, here's the piece where I'm talking about that there is pshutei kliyetz that are mitkabel tumah deoraita. Here we have it in our Gemara over here. That's one of the categories that he speaks about, and he's saying, I'm pointing it out to you here, this is where this category is. Mar says, Yehochi cheres nami. If you want to do this, if you're going to be gozer about tumat mashkim on a pshutei kliyetz, which otherwise should be tahor, and you're going to say, I'm going to make gzeres rabbanan, why don't you do the same thing with the kli cheres? Why do you have to say, I'm coming onto a kliyetz, let's say it's about a kli cheres, and do this all midoraita, kli cheres. Toch, yes, outside, no, that's a din doraita. Tumat mashkim, if it's flat, then it'll be mekabel tumah from both sides for tumat mashkim. It says, ein midras b'kli cheres. That's just a statement. There is no such thing as tumat midras by kli cheres. Rashi says something interesting, which is, because if he sits on it, it's going to break. It's not strong enough. Kli cheres, earthenware utensils, are not strong enough to be mekabel midras, and therefore, they're not mekabel tumat midras whatsoever. That's the end of that sidebar. That really had nothing to do with our Gemara. It was just making the point that you should accept this explanation of the Mishnayot in Elot and Kelim, just like the testimony of Chizkiah Avikesh, which nobody argued on. Even though there was difficult, we figured out a way to explain it. So it's talking about not Kli Cheres, but Kli Shetev, it's talking about Kli Eitz, it's talking about Tumat Mashkim, the Rabbanan. They worked through all these machinations to make it work because nobody argued on him, so we had to figure out what it meant. And we figured out that Mishnah. So just like we accepted the testimony of Chizkiah Avikesh, even though it was a little difficult, so too you should accept this explanation of the Mishnayot and Kelim and Olot. Again, nothing fundamentally or internally about it. It has to do with our Gemara. It's just that point that we have sometimes difficult Mishnayot that have to be explained, and we explain them. So too over here, we had a difficult Mishnah in a Kelim and Olot, and now we explained it away. Now we give an alternative answer, which I always thought when I read it, I thought this should be the answer right away. That's from Rav Papa. Papa Amar, Magdeach Gadol Shaninu. The Mishnah in Kelim says that it's Magdeach Gadol Shevelishka. It doesn't talk about a regular drill. It talks about the large drill that's found in the Azara. That's the difference. In one case, we're talking about a drill. That's the case of the skull. That's a regular drill hole. That's Beit Shammai. Over there in Kelim, when we discuss the size of the skylight that has to be opened up in order to have Tumah pass through it, there we say Magdeach Gadol, the large drill. That large drill is like a size of a sella, but not a small drill. A small drill is not the size of a sella. And that would make a distinction between them. That means the size of a sella is actually bigger than a drill hole. It's the size of a large drill hole. It's not the size of a small drill hole. So that's the answer the Republic has. Rebecha Amar, Magdeach Gadol Shalinu, Michlal. If that's the case, the Magdeach Stam Zutra. That means that a small drill is Zutra Nami Mikasela, is smaller than the size of a cella. Rebecha says, that works well. Anicha, the Rabbi Meir. That works well, according to Rabbi Meir. Elo, the Rabbanan, Maika, the Meimer. According to Rabbanan, you're going to have a difficult time. Ditznan. Beza Magdeach Amru. When we said in Olot that the drill hole has to be in the skull in order for it either not to be mitamei ba'olel or to make it into a treifa, what drill were we talking about? So he says, Rabbi Meir says, Amru b'katan shorufim. We're talking about the doctor's drill. Doctor's drill, which he uses to take out whatever it is from the skull. That's a small drill that we're talking about. So that explanation of Papa will make sense. We're talking about a small drill in the Mishnah in Ohalot with regards to the skull. And the drill that we're talking about the skylight in Kelim is talking about the large drill. And that'll be the distinction between them. Divrei Rabbi Meir. But B'chachomim omrim that the drill we're talking about in Ohalot is also Magdeach Gadol Shelishka. It's also talking about the large drill. Now you have a problem. Because he's saying that there's a large drill in Ohalot and a large drill in Kelim. We're back to square one. So, the Rabbi Meir, Minecha. Oh, wait a minute. Is Rabbi Meir really also okay here? Havale mikule Beit Shammai u'mechumre Beit Hillel. This is, then becomes a kula of Beit Shammai and a chumra of Beit Hillel. That means that Beit Shammai is requiring a smaller hole in the skull in order for the skull no longer to be mitamei bohel. He says a small drill hole. That's all you need in order for it not to be mitamei bohel. Beit Hillel says, no, you need a size of a cella. And we're saying now that a cella is the size of a big drill, not the size of a small drill. That means that Beit Hillel requires a larger piece of the skull to be missing in order for it not to be mitamei bohel. That's a chumrah in Beit Hillel. Anand, it's non-tnan. Whatever we have a mishnah that says that that's the case, that's what we have. It's lo-tnan. If we don't have it enumerated amongst the things that are chumrot of Beit Hillel, lo-tnan, then we don't have it. We can't just say all of a sudden, oh yeah, that's okay. It is a case where Beit Hillel is machmir. So I'm Rav Nachman, I'll explain it to you. Sela nironit shaninu. What we're talking about here is that the sela nironit ki magdeach gadol, that has the same din or the same size as the magdeach gadol belishka, the large drill in the lishka. Selastam zutra mi makdeach stam. A regular cella is not only smaller than the big drill, it's also smaller than the small drill. So basically what Rav Nachman does is he creates a hierarchy here, and in creating that hierarchy, we will be able to explain the Mishnayot and keep Beit Hillel as the Meikyo. And that is, you have the largest size hole is the size of the large drill of the Lishka, which is equal to a cella nironit. It's equal to a Niro cella. So that is the largest hole that you can have. And that's what it's talking about in the skylight in the Mishnah in Kelim. Number two is, the next size down is a small drill hole. A small drill hole is the next size down. That is the opinion of Beit Shammai in Ohalot. The opinion of Beit Shammai in Ohalot is that what has to be missing from the skull in order for it to be tahor, not be metamei tumatol, is the drill of, according to Rabbi Meir, of a rofe, of a doctor's drill. So you have the large drill of the Lishka, which is the same size as the Sela Nironit, Below that, on a hierarchy basis, you have the size of a doctor's drill. And then below that, you have a regular sella, the size of a coin. The regular sella is not only smaller than the sella nironit, it's also smaller than the doctor's drill. So now I can explain all the cases. In the case in Awalot, where we have a machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel says it's the size that you take away and the person would die, and we had an opinion that was the size of a sella. That's the smallest size. That means Beit Hillel is the most nekil. They say that if you're just missing the size of a sella, it's not metameh b'molel anymore. Beit Shammai says, no, it has to be the size of a drill. What type of drill? According to Reb Meir, it's the doctor's drill. That's bigger than a sella, but still smaller than the big drill of the lishka. So that drill hole will be bigger than the opinion of Beit Hillel. It means Beit Shammai is machmir here. The Mishnah in Kelim that says that the skylight has to be the size of a big drill of the lishka or sella nironit, that's even bigger. That's bigger than the drill of a rofe, and that's a whole different category. That's a third category of size. And that's how we reconcile this stirot over here, because we're talking about different drills, and we're talking about different coins. And once you do that, there's no longer a stirot between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. So that's how Rav Papa, modified by Rav Nachman, solves that stira, rather than what we suggested before, that solving the stira has to do with whether you put in the coin and it just gets lodged in there, or whether the coin can pass through or not pass through. All right. Now we move on to the next Mishnah in Mumin. Haris Shelayin. I'm going to say eyelid here. It's not defined in the Mishnah. The Gemara will tell us that it is an eyelid, the upper eyelid. The Haris Shelayin Shini Kev, that was somehow punctured, perforated. Or Shiniv Gam, is missing a piece. It was nipped. Or Shinizdak, cracked. It had a slit. All of those are Mumim. Hare Be'ino Dak. If his eye has a cataract, tavlul, all of these will be defined by the Mishnah. Tavlul, chilazon, nachash, all of those mumim, and then there's one more mum, which Rashi has as etzev, but the girsa changes that it's an inva. Ezehu tavlul, what is a tavlul? Lavan aposek bisira v'nichnas bishachor. It's when the white of the eye breaks through the outer ring of the pupil and then goes into the black of the pupil. Whereas shachor, nechnas b'lavan, if it's the other way around, where the black of the pupil comes out to the white part of the eye, ain't a mum. That's not a mum. So it's only when the white penetrates inward that it's a mum, but if the black penetrates outward, it's not a mum. So now the Gemara is going to explain. My rish shalayin. What is a rish shalayin? Amar papa, Torah bara de'ena. It is the outer cover, the outer row of the eye, meaning the eyelid. The upper eyelid that covers the eye, that's called the ris shalayin. If it has any of these, whether it's nizdak, nifgam, or nikev, that is a mum in the animal. Now, dak and tavlul, we talked about the cataract, dak. Tanu Rabbanan, dak mishuka, or is a mum. If the cataract is sunken, then it's a mum, or causes the eye to sink, it's a mum. Tzach, if it's floating in the eye, ain't a mum, it's not a mum. Don't we have a brighter that says just the opposite? That if it's depressed in the eye, that it's not a mum. If it's floating, it is a mum. That depends if it's in the pupil or in the white of the eye. Don't we have a principle that there is no such thing as a mum in the white part of the eye? The white part of the eye has no din of mumim. So how could you suggest that we're talking about the white part of the eye? Elaha, bedok lavan, habedok shachor. Depends if the cataract is white or black. The Amar Rabba Barchana Sakli Rabbi Yoshaya De Min Usha that I have over from Rabbi Yoshaya Min Usha Dak Shachor. We're talking about a black cataract. Mishuka Harizei Mum. If it's depressed into the eye, or the eye is depressed because of it, it's a mum. Tzaf, if it's floating in the eye, inumum. Dak Lavan, on the other hand, if you have a white cataract, Mishuka inumum. If it's depressed or the eye is depressed because of it, it's not a mum. Tzaf, if it's floating, Harizei Mum. The simaneich barka, and the way to remember that is barka. Barka is actually a reference to the Gemara in Baba Metzia. It's a Mishnah in Baba Metzia that says someone who rented a chamor, and then it was some sort of lightning. I don't know if it actually struck the animal or the animal saw the lightning and it had affected it, its eyesight. That's called barka. So because lightning is white, number one, and it looks like it's floating in the sky, and it causes a problem with the eyes. So that'll be the siman that by white, you need it to be floating in order for it to be a mum. Just like the lightning bolt floats in the sky, so too the white cataract, if it's floating, is a mum. All right, chilazon, nachash, ve'etzev, or according to the other gears of Inev. Ibaluhu, chilazon, hu nachash. Is the chilazon synonymous with the nachash? Meaning that the snail is the nachash, is the snake? Or dumay chilazon, o nachash. Or are they two separate mumim? In the Mishnah, is it telling us that the chilazon is just like the nachash? Or is it telling us that there is a mum called chilazon and a mum called nachash? Tashma. Tama Rabba Barchano, Sachli, Rabbi Yochanan ben Elazar. Rabbi Yochanan ben Elazar told me, Zaken achara ya bishkunotenu. There was this elder gentleman in our neighborhood, Rabbi Yossi ben Lekunya Shemo. That was his name. He was a Kohen. And I never went in front of him, meaning that he was a gadol ador, and I never had a chance really to speak to him or have anything to do with him. One day I was passing by him. Amalei, shave bini, shave. Says, take a seat over here, young man. He's on chilazon zemum kavua lishkot alav. Want you to know that a chilazon, that mum of chilazon, is a good enough mum to shech the bechor on it. B'zehu nachash shamru chachamim. That's equivalent to the nachash that's mentioned by the chachamim. So it's two names for the same mum. So what happened here? You had a talmud chacham, a gadol ador, who's a kohen who had a bechor. The bechor in its eye had this chilazon. And he's telling you that the chilazon in the eye is synonymous with the word nachash. But what was the problem? He needed somebody to be matir his bechor. Why wasn't he matir his own bechor? That we learned already on Daf Lamed Aleph, which is that you're not allowed to be matir your own bechorot. So he couldn't be matir his own bechorot. So what did he do? He sat down Rabbi Yochanan ben Elazar and says, listen, I want to teach you something about mumim. And then I want you to be matir the bechor for me. V'afo pishamru ein adam roe mumim latzmo. Even though we said earlier in the Masechta that a person can't look at his own mumim, can't paskan his own mumim, avol mora halacha l'talmidim, he can teach the halacha to someone else, v'talmidim morim. And the talmidim can be mora halacha. So that's the case over here. He taught Rabbi Yochanan ben Elazar what a chilazon is. And then he says, you paskin that this animal is mutar, that it's a bechor bal mum. V'ha amar Rabbi Ava amar Rav Huna. Kol Tamid Chacham Shomera Halacha Uba. Any Tamid Chacham that brings us a mechudash explanation in Halacha. Im Kol Demase Amra. If he told us about it before this happened, Shomim Lo. Then we listen to him. Bim Lav Ein Shomim Lo. But if not, we do not listen to him about this. Now Kol Demase means over here, he is Nogeva Davar. This is a Halacha that has something to do with him. And all of a sudden he's Mechadesh, this thing. I have this Shmua. I have this mechuda shmua, or I have this way of explaining the halacha, and he comes up with this chiddush, but it's to his benefit. Because the halacha revolves around him now, and now he's coming up with something that is suddenly to his benefit. So we suspect the reason that he all of a sudden found this memra, or this mesorah, or this chiddush, is because he wants to help himself out. He wants to be matir for himself. So therefore, if it's in the heat of the psach halacha for himself, we don't allow him to bring in this new information. If he already brought up this new information beforehand, then when it comes to the psach halacha for him, we'll also ask him based on that for him. Because there, he clearly didn't bring it up, just in the context of needing it. So isn't that the case over here? You have this Talmud Chacham teaching about this halacha by chilazon and nachash to Rabbi Yochanan ben Elazar, and it's the first time we're hearing about it. It's the first time he's hearing about it. How can he even mechadish halacha for his benefit? He wants them to paskin on the bechor based on this information. So the Gemara says, Iunami more uva hava miikora. Now this wasn't the first time he had taught about this. He had taught him this beforehand. He had taught this information beforehand. This wasn't the first time we pumped into the information. And that's why he was allowed to do this scheme with Rabbi Yochanan ben Elazar to have him learn and then paskin on his behalf. And that's what explains. We only say this issue about being brechadesh halacha, elahecha tzarech lauto araki halacha, that where he himself needs that hora'ah. But if it's a hora'ah that helps someone else, or it's a hora'ah that he brings up in another context, we don't push it away. We don't say, this is chadash, you can't bring it in. No, we say that there is. He heard something unusual, so let's hear about it. Let's look at it. Let's look into the issue. Okay, next piece of the Gemara. Ezehu tavlul. What is this tavlul? So we've dealt with nachash chilazon. We dealt with rishi ba'ayin. We dealt with dak. So now we're dealing with what is the tavlul? The Mishnah said, halavana poseket ha-sira, that it's the white that goes through the border around the pupil, around the black, and then into the black. Matnitan mani. Who's the author of our Mishnah? Rabbi Yossi. It must be Rabbi Yossi, because the Tanya, Lavana nechnas b'shachor, shachor nechnas b'lavana, zemum, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says it's irrelevant whether it's the white going into the area that's normally black, or the black going into the area that's normally white, that is a mum. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Lavan v'nechnas b'shachor, if it's the white going into the black part of the eye, are zemum, that is a mum. Shachor v'nechnas levan, if it's the black going into the white, ain't a mum, she'ain mumim v'lavan. There is no such thing as a mum in the Lavan. That accords with our Mishnah. So Rabbi Yossi is obviously the author of our Mishnah, not Rabbi Meir. Amar Rav, my time with Rabbi Yossi. How does Rabbi Yossi know this? Dichtiv etzah mechilev enimo. This is a pasuk in Tehillim. The pashup shat of the pasuk is that the Rasha, you can see that he has become fat and happy because the white of his eyes bulged forth. The white of his eyes, which the Gemara clearly associates with fat because of its whiteness, says that with the Rasha, when he's fat and happy, the white of his eyes bulged forth. So you see, it's a mechilev enimo. Tarba de'ena ikri. The white of the eye is called the fat of the eye. Enimo stama lo ikri. But a plain eye, it's not called. So the white of the eye is not really the eye. It's the fat surrounding the eye, not the eye itself. If that's the case, you can't have a mum in the fat. You can only have a mum in the eye, you can't have a mum in the fat. Rabbi Meir, my time, what's Rabbi Meir's reasoning? Malashon tavlo. What does tavlo mean? Where did they come up with this word tavlo? Davar ha-mibalbelet ayin. Something that messes up the eye. Well, it's a mixture. So if it's the white into the black, or the black into the white, that's also a bilbo. Both of those are mixtures. Those are in the wrong place. And therefore, it is a mum in either direction. Okay, next Mishnah, next mumim. Chavarvar v'hamayim hakivuim. So these are now two other additional mumim. Chavarvar is a choli, it's a sickness where you have white dots on the eye. Mayim hakivuim is an animal that tears on a constant basis. V'hamayim hakivuim. Now the kivuim is modifying both of them. The chavarvar and the mayim. If it's always tearing, or if it always has white spots on them. Now the Gemara asks, Ezu chavavar hakavua, how do you know that the white spots are permanent? Kol shesha shmonim yom. That's if it's in there for 80 days. Chananya ben Antigonos omer, amar budkim otol gimel pamim betok shmonim yom. Check him 3 times during that 80 day period to spot check him to make sure that it's there all the way through. Ilein mayim hakavuim, what is called water when it's always tearing, and that's called kavua? Achal lach v'yaveshog shemim. If he ate grains, if he ate fodder that was planted in a field that is watered by rain, that's whether it's moist or whether it's dried out, lach v'yavesho shlachim, or he ate moist and dry grains from the shlachim, which is beit habal, an area that has to be watered by hand. Oh, achala yavesh rachak achalach, he ate the dry grain first and then the moist grain, eino mum. That does not tell us that this is a mum. Until it eats first the moist grain, and afterwards the dry grain, because that's the refuah for tearing. And since that's the refuah for tearing, until you've done that refuah, we don't know if it's really tearing, if it's really a problem. This is the test for it. Now Tosafot raises the issue and says, wait a minute. If something that is a mum, I thought a mum kavua is something that it's irreparable, something that can't go back. You're suggesting over here that it's a mum kavua that does have a refuah. There's some sort of medical way to solve it. So Tosus over here says, Deheicha de'ein mitrapa me'elav chashiv mum. If it will not heal by itself, if it needs an external rofet to come in, that is still called a mum. Even if you can rectify it, even though you can cure it, but if it only be cured by an outside force coming in, that's still considered to be a mum and a mum kavua. So over here, since the animal naturally will not cure, it will not cure itself, you're bringing in an outside refuah, therefore it's still considered a mum. That's one. The other way to explain it, which I think is a more plausible explanation over here, that this is a test, not a refuah. The fact is that if this medicinal eating will solve it, that means that it's not this tearing mum. That's what we're testing for here. We're not saying that it's a solvable, it's not a curable mum. We're just saying that you have to test the mum to see if it is kavua. How do you test the mum to see if it's kavua? You have to feed it in this way. Not that this is a cure for the mum. The mum has no cure. If it was there and we gave it this refuah and it's not cured, it's a mum kavua. This is the test, not a medicinal usage. That's how Tosus explains this latter half over here. So where it says, Matinitan Mani, who's the author of our Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda, he must be Rabbi Yehuda, the Tanya. Chavarvara kavua arbaim yom. Rabbi Meir says these white spots to be considered kavua has to be there for 40 days. The tearing has to be there for 80 days. That even the chavarvar requires 80 days, and that's what we said in our Mishnah. Or it's also the chavarvar needs 80 days, and that's what we said in our Mishnah, that the kvuim of the chavarvar was 80 days. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda is the author of the Mishnah, not Rabbi Meir. Ve'elu hein mayim akvuim. What is the case of mayim hakavuim? Now we're quoting this braita. V'achal lach v'yavesh shel beit hashlachim. If he ate the moist and the dry grains of a field that was watered by hand. Oh, shachal yavesh, rachakach achal lach. If he ate the dry grain first and then the moist grain afterwards. Ein mum. It's not a mum. Achi yuchal yavesh achar alach. until he eats the dry grain after the moist grain. Vaha tarvayu taninu. In our Mishnah, we said both of them, meaning achal lach v'yaveshel shemim, lach v'yaveshel beit ha-shlachim. Our Mishnah did not distinguish between a field that was watered by rain and a field that was watered by hand. In either case, if he ate both grains from that field, that was not the medicinal mixture. And then why does the bright only bring one? It only brings the example of beit ha-shlachim, implying that if it came from beit ha-shlachim, if it did come from a field watered by rain, that it would have medicinal value. Where it says, Chasuri Mechsura, Mishnah is actually missing some words. V'achatani. Achav alach v'yavesh yog shamim, arizem mom. If he ate lach and yavesh from a field that is watered by rain, then it is a mom, because that is curable, that is curative. Beit ha-shlachim, ain't no mom. But if he eats it from the beit ha-shlachim, it's not a mom. Ude gishamim nami. And there, what I said to you before about the gishamim, that it is a mom, that's achal yavesh, v'achal lach, ain't no mom. If he ate the dry grain first and then the moist grain, then it doesn't have any determination in terms of mum. Achi yochal yavesh, achar halach. Until it eats the dry grain after the moist grain. V'esh no gimel chadashim, and then it has 3 months. So what we're doing in the end, what we're modifying in the end is that the beit ha-shlachim is useless whatsoever. Any grains from there are not part of this curative process. They're out of the picture. In terms of the gishamim, in the gishamim we're going to say that if you ate them together, they don't work. If you ate the dry before the moist, doesn't work. You have to eat the dry after the moist grain. And that's the only way that it'll be curative, and it has to come from a field that is rain. So that's how we'll reconcile between the Braita and our Mishnah. So now, V'yishno gimel chadashin, the Braita told us that you have to have over a 3 month period in order for it to be kavua. Ini, is that really true? V'amar ravidi ba'avin amar rav yitzak bar shian adar v'nisan lach. The moist months are the months of Adar v'nisan. Elul v'tishrei are yavesh, are the dry months. I mean, the grains that are brought in Adar and Nisan are moist. Grains that are brought in Elul v'tishrei are dry. That's 4 months. So if that's 4 months, then what are you talking about a 3 month period? Same Adar v'chatzi Nisan. No, it's Adar and half the month of Nisan is lach, is the moist time. Elul v'chatzi tishrei, that's the yavesh time. Now the Gemara asks about this. Ibalu, lach v'zman alach, yavesh v'zman yavesh. Does he have to eat the moist grains during the moist harvest and the dry grains during the dry harvest? Or does it have to be that you're eating the moist and the dry grains during the moist harvest? Now it has to be during the moist harvest, because if you're doing it during the dry harvest, the original grains from the moist time, from the sun and Adar, will not be moist anymore. They will have to be dry. So it has to be that we have dry grains at the time of the moist harvest. So at the time of the moist harvest, meaning in the sun and Adar, does he eat both dry grain and moist grain then? Or do we say he has to eat them in the periods? He has to eat the moist grain when the moist harvest happens, and he has to eat the dry grains when the dry harvest happens. Tashma. So there you see that it's spread out over the year. Adar v'nisan is referring to the moist grains, and elul v'tishrei are the dry grains. Where it says dilma doesn't mean that's when you have to eat them. That it means peyrei delul v'tishrei v'achilin le'ba adar v'nisan. The produce, the harvest of elul v'tishrei, which is the dry harvest, we feed it to him during Adar v'nisan. So there we have an inconclusive. The Gemara doesn't know whether it has to be eaten at the period that it's harvested, or it's eaten together at the period of the moist harvest. V'kama machilin oto, how much do we give the animal in order to see if it's curative? Rabbi Yochan Mishum Rabbi Pinchas ben Aruva kegrugoret, the size of a dried fig. Amar Rava, Vayibim Marava, and Eretz Yisrael they asked this question. Kegrugoret besuda rishona, odel v'chol suda besuda. In order to be curative, do you have to feed him this medicinal fodder or straw before his first meal of the day, or before every meal of the day? Im tim salomar, if you say besuda rishona, they don't have to feed him it before the first meal of the day. Before he begins to eat or after he begins to eat. We know for sure that if he eats it before he has his meal, then it'll help, it'll be efficacious. Kasama. Like just like any other medicine that you take it on an empty stomach, and that's when it helps. After he eats, what's the din? Kodem shtiya or achar shtiya? Is it before he drinks or after he drinks? V'kodem shvida bade malilei. For sure, if he eats the medicine before, takes this medicine or the curative grains before he drinks, then it'll be helpful. Kasare, just like when it comes to barley, he first eats the barley and then he drinks. Achar shtiya mai. After he drinks, what's the din? Kashura mutar. Does the animal have to be, can be tied up or going to be free to roam around? Mutar vade malilei. Sure, if it's not tied up, it'll do better because he's free, he's more relaxed. Kashur mai. If he's tied up, is it work? Levado im mechaviro. Does he have to eat it alone Or does he eat it with his friend? If he has a partner there, he's more comfortable again, and that for sure will have curative properties. What would be the din if he's left alone? Be'iru b'sadeh. Do you have to do it in the city, or you do it out in the field? B'sadeh v'adai malilei. In the field, it's definitely better for him, because that's his home, that's where he feels comfortable. And it's a wider, open area. Be'ir, where there's noises, and it's a more cramped area, amai. What's the din? Bai Rav Ashi. Imtim tzalor b'sadeh. If you say it only works out in the field, dinas mukhalir. If you're talking about a garden that's close to the city, what's the din of that? It's not literally in the city, but it's in a garden close to the city. Mai, teiku. We leave these all as unresolved questions as to where this medicinal eating is curative. And that is both in time and location. It has to be before meals, after meals, in the field, in the city. All of those we leave as inconclusive. So let's just finish up to the Mishnah. Rabbi Hananya ben Antigonus Omer. We saw in the Mishnah where it says that Badukino tok yomu pamim tok shmanim yom. Checks him 3 times during the 80 days. So Mara says, Amrav Nachman Yitzchak Bavachei Mishulashim. They have to be in thirds. Right, now let's explain this. There are different ways that you can divide something up into thirds. The one way to divide up in thirds, and that's what Tosfos explains to Mara here, Mishulashim means he checks once in the beginning of the 80 days, once at the end of the 80 days, and once in the middle. So you do it in the way beginning, you'll do it at the 40th day, and then you'll do it at the 80th day. That's what Mishulashim means according to Tosafot. The other option is to explain that really the 3 checks have to be equidistant from each other. That means that they have to be equidistant from the first time to the first check, from the first check to the second check, and then to the 3rd check. We have such a situation, Mishulashim, by the Ari Miklat. There are 3 Ari Miklat, north and south in Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara says that they have to be Mishulashka Dvucha, that you have to be Mishalesh, you have to divide them evenly. That means from the southern border of Eretz Yisrael to the first Ir Miklat, Hebron, should be the same distance as from Hebron to Shechem, which is the next Ir Miklat. And then from Shechem to the Ir Miklat in the north should be the same distance. And then from the one in the north to the northern border will also be the same distance. So what you actually do is divide the country up into 4 pieces. And then you place the 3 Ari Miklat along the divisions of those 4 pieces. So same thing here. Maybe you should say the same thing here. And that's what Tosafot said would have come out. If you define Mishulashim that way, meaning that you would check at the 20th day, the 40th day, and the 60th day. Now Rashi doesn't explain like that. Rashi explains that the Mishulashim here means that you check on the first day. Then you check 26 and a half days later. You check the 2nd time. Then another 26 and a half days later, you check again. And then another 27 days later, you check for the 4th time. So Rashi says over here, Shmuel Shulashim means that it's actually 4 checks, but they're split out evenly. There's 26 and a half days between each of the checks. Now Tosafot says, it sounds like Rashi is interpreting Mishulashim the way that we just said. It has to be 4 parts, like the way we do by the Ari Miklat. Tosafot disagrees with Rashi. Says Mishulash means beginning, end, and middle. He says that by Gidim, when they're sewing up the Megillah, it says over there, you have to have at least 3 Gidim to sew it up, to stitch the pieces together, and they have to be Mishulashim. So Rashi explains Mishulashim like he does by Ari Miklat. It means that they're equidistant from each other as well as equidistant from the edges. So it says no. One at the top, one at the bottom, one in the middle. And that's the way he explains the Gemara over here. Rashi explains like he does by Ari Miklat, where Tosafot has to agree that's what the Gemara is saying. And over here, he seems to be, as Tosafot is saying, favoring that explanation. But he doesn't say that it's on the 20th, 40th, and 60th day. The reason I think that Rashi was forced this way is because you can't say that it's an 80-day period unless you have a starting point. Without a bedikah, there is no starting point. You have that by dinei nida. In order to have a sfira of zayin torim for a nida, you have to do a bedikah because you need a beginning of sfira. You can't have sfira without the beginning. And Rav Soloveitchik also said this with regards to sfira to Omer. If you miss the first day, there are some of the geonim that say that you lose it out of the count, whereas if you do it any other day, you're okay. That's because if you don't have the first day, you can't be counting. You have to set down the marker when you begin to count. So let's do over here. The first check, according to Rashi, is starting the count. It's not part of the count. It's the marker to tell you when to start. And then the evenly distributed Mishulashim, the breakdown after that, is dividing it up into thirds for the next 3 checks. That'll be 26 and a half days later, 26 and a half days later, and then the 27th day, which will get you to the 80-day mark. So that's just in the definition of Mishulashim. Vayminei Pinchas Ahua Demar Shmo Mishmo. Achal Velo Itse. If he eats it and it's not cured, L'mavreya Habimuma or Mikana Labah Habimuma. If after this test period, over the 80-day period, it's not curative, then we know it is a mum. When is it classified as a mum? Is it classified as a mum from now forward? Or is it classified as a mum afreya from the time that we discovered that it had this issue? The mayin afkamino. What's the difference? The mim al bipijano. It's obviously not talking about a bechor. It's talking about psulei amukdashim that get this mum. And you set aside money to redeem this psulei amukdashim. If you say retroactively that it is a mom, moyel. If he used the money in the interim, then he was moel in hekdesh because the monies really were tofaced to kedusha of sulam ukdashim. If you say that it's only a mom from now forward, prospectively, then have a muma below moyel. It was a mom at that point, and therefore the pidyon only takes effect from now forward. That means that if you used the money beforehand, you weren't moel in the money because it wasn't redeeming anything yet because there wasn't a mom. My. What's the din? So, Kari Shmuel Alei, we don't have an answer to the question, but Shmuel says about this Pinchas, Achua Demar Shmuel, who asked this question of Shmuel, said about his brother, he says, I didn't expect this of you. Kari Shmuel Alei, Pischim Bazzubaz. Do the lame take from the booty? I mean, that's not something that's expected. Healthy people run and everybody's grabbing and from the booty, you don't see the lame people who had trouble walking. They're not going to be the ones who are diving in to grab from the booty. So to over here, I didn't expect such a good question from someone like you. You know, you're surprising me here. I didn't think that you had such strong questions or that you were of such stature. And now I'm seeing that you're asking a question that I don't have the answer to. So that's what Shmuel says about his brother Pinchas. Okay, we'll stop over here.